Thanks for downloading the Overdrive podcast. Do not forget to follow us on Instagram at TSN1050, where there will be Insta stories, some best of clips from the show, and some very cool contest opportunities to win tickets and more. Again, on Instagram at TSN1050.
Never filtered, always fun.
Getting a read on Belichick is pretty difficult to do, even I would think behind the scenes. But that's the only thing that makes the ultimate sense on why he would catfish Indianapolis.
Catfish. It is catfish.
No FaceTime. Can't FaceTime tonight.
This is Overdrive on TSN 1050, the official voice of the Leafs.
Brian Hasey, O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill.
Update what we've been fascinated on this week, or today, sorry.
Well, the Toronto firefighter who went missing in Lake Placid, and he showed up in Sacramento, California, earlier this afternoon.
And one of our correspondents, one of my good friends, Mike Chick, has said it's a 45-hour drive from Lake Placid to Sacramento.
This is so fascinating on so many different levels. Like, so many people were going down there from Toronto, firefighters, people he worked with, people that he didn't even work with. You had state police, local police. And you had to think he was never going to show up again. 6 days ago, he disappeared in Lake Placid, freezing cold. Nothing to eat on the hill.
But
nobody
knew
when
he shows up. I watch stupid shows on TV, but this guy needed money to live. His bank card must have been used somewhere. Isn't there technology to track that?
That's what I'm wondering. Like, people are writing that in. You know, what was he eating? Where was he sleeping? Going to the washroom.
Yeah, he had to check into a hotel.
Unless he's just walking aimlessly, but you can't walk to California.
Thanks, Tips.
Well, I know that, but I'm saying, like, if he didn't jump on a bird, which he didn't, by all accounts, he didn't get on a plane, you would think they would have checked to see if he's rented a car. Do you hitchhike all the way to California? And how do you go about doing that? I don't know, man. This is fascinating. So we're going to keep tracking that. We're on top of things. And the Leafs are coming off a big win last night, 4-3 against Tampa. And they beat Tampa recently at home. They've beat Nashville at home. They've beaten Anaheim at home. We keep throwing it out there, measuring stick games. At what point do we just accept they're a really good team? Maybe not a top three or four team in the league, and I don't think they will between now and the beginning of the playoffs, but a really good team, a top 10 team.
Who is the top three or four teams in the league? It's Boston. It's Tampa. Is it Vegas?
I can't put Vegas there.
Okay.
I can't. So. I would put Nashville, Winnipeg, Boston, Tampa, Pittsburgh as my top five.
Okay.
And then it's Vegas, Washington, Toronto, St. Louis.
There you go.
Like, those are the next wave of teams, and
you
that's
just
where
named
Toronto
one
is.
Of the teams that's going to win the Stanley Cup is basically what you did.
Yeah, I think so. Like, I think one of the top five teams are more than likely going to win it, but Pittsburgh, like, can they do it three times in a row? Are they going to? I know they're really hot right now, and they're picking up steam, and they're probably going to make a move.
As far as, like, the mental intimidation, they've got that going for them right now.
Oh, you got to give
them
credit.
Nobody wants to play Pittsburgh.
Why would you? They're back-to-back cup champs.
I'm sure there was a little bit where Washington was thinking, finally these guys are going to go away, and we have kind of a fresh energy with some young guys and some older guys out. Nope. Can you imagine them in the first round again?
Washington doesn't scare me.
No.
Like, I think the Leafs could beat Washington, no problem. I'd have no problem with Toronto playing Washington. I'd almost prefer somehow Florida passes Toronto, they drop into a wild card spot, and they cross over and play Washington, and then play Pittsburgh. Because going through Boston and Tampa, regardless of which order it is, I'm not sure it gets any more difficult than that. Maybe Nashville, Winnipeg. Maybe if you're St. Louis and you're like, I'm going to have to play Winnipeg in the first round and then maybe Nashville in the second round, that might be a more daunting task. But outside of that, having to go through Boston and Tampa, it's not going to be easy. But as John Cooper was saying before the game yesterday, and I'm sure he's going to say it after the game, Toronto is not going to be a cakewalk. Toronto's not exactly who you want to play in the first round.
I know we talked to Jerry last year at the draft, and I asked about the playoff format. They have to rethink that. You have got to. 1 versus 8, blah, blah, blah. This is stupid. There's nothing he could say to me that would say this is great for the game.
Yeah, I'm not. I was a proponent of it early. I liked the idea of building up
No.
Rivalries in your own division.
No. It's stupid.
I'm with you. I've turned to the point where you realize the game isn't the same anymore. Rivalries aren't what they once were.
No.
Like rivalries were, we're going to have fights tonight and big hits and we're going to hate each other. No teams hate each other. So you can't build up the old school type of rivalry.
Although there's a rivalry Washington and Pittsburgh because you know why? They played in the playoffs so many times.
But they did when it was 1-8. They were still playing each other.
That's luck of the draw.
Yeah, but
I just want 1-8.
But and there's also too many teams in the league where you don't play your own division more than 4 times the next year. Like, it'd be one thing if you knew, okay, they're going to play Boston in the playoffs, and next year they're going to play 8 times. Wow, that's 8 opportunities for craziness. 8 opportunities to carry over what they did the year before. It doesn't happen. Like, the Leafs have still not played Buffalo yet. Neither team in danger of meeting each other in the playoffs at any point over the past 10 or 15 years. But let's say last year, the Leafs and Sabres met in the playoffs, and it was a crazy series.
And then you had to wait until...
You had to wait 4 months till you played again? There's no way you would be anticipating craziness to carry over.
No.
So I'm with you. I would go 1-8. Quite frankly, in a perfect world, I'd go 1-16.
You're not going to be able to do that with travel.
It's never going to happen. And with time zones and TV obligations and travel being what it is, aerodynamics being what it is, it's not going to happen. But that would be an interesting test. Like, let me look at it if I can here quickly. The Leafs are 5th overall, so they would play the 11th seed. They'd play Pittsburgh.
How much do you want that now?
It would be Toronto versus Pittsburgh if it started tonight, 1-16, 2-15, 3-14.
What would it be 1-8?
1-8 in the East would be Tampa versus Carolina, I believe. Yeah, it'd be Tampa versus Carolina, Boston versus New Jersey, Toronto versus Philly, Washington versus Pitt. That would be the 4-5.
I would take Philly in the first round.
I wouldn't mind Toronto, Philly in the first round. I wouldn't mind that at all. But you know the way the NHL works, man. They don't change their minds. They don't decide to go a different way. They get committed to it. Look at the ridiculous review process that they've gone through here. How slow they are to change the offside review. The goaltender review is completely out of whack. They're stubborn. Their commitment to the southern markets has proven that. I mean, the fact that Arizona still has a team speaks to how stubborn they are and committed they are. You can look at it both ways. Bob McKenzie will join us in studio. Now that we've got hour one of the podcast up on iTunes, people are going back and listening to the first hour, and they're tweeting about what we had to say about Steve Kerr and the Warriors last night. Because if you're not aware of this, Golden State was playing against Phoenix at home, and they destroyed them. They beat them by almost 40. And in the fourth quarter, Steve Kerr basically just said, I'm done. He stopped coaching, and he let the players coach themselves. And Draymond Green, who didn't play, was calling plays during a timeout. Andre Iguodala was involved in that, a couple of other players involved. And Kerr said the reason for it was he wanted to engage his players. He wanted his players to feel something different because he feels like they've been in a malaise over the past month. And he's trying to trigger some sort of a reaction out of them. But naturally, he disrespected the coaching fraternity and the game has come up, and that's your take, and it's been your take all day. And I'll be honest, based on the amount of tweets and texts and emails we're getting, I'd say it's about 70-30 in favor of your take. That he disrespected Jay Triano and the Suns and the sport and the players. And
there's also the personalities involved. Draymond Green. You don't think he would be a goof about that?
Yeah, he probably was going to play hero.
Exactly.
Was probably going to play hero. But I just feel like Golden State, they are on such a different level than any other team in pro sports. They have to challenge themselves. They have to feel as if they're dealing with something new and different. And I kind of appreciate the uniqueness of Kerr's approach. He stepped into a scenario here where they're a dynasty. They are one of the great sporting teams ever put together. They all know that they're going to win an NBA title, or they feel pretty good about that. But it's about just making sure that the journey remains a little bit different. You stay off the beaten path. You try to engage your team. Like he doesn't coach the same way any other head coach in the league coaches. Not about X's and O's. It's not about trying to get effort out of them because the talent isn't there. He knows what he's got. And he's trying to do something different. Whether or not it factors into the long road, I don't know.
He's got to step outside the box and try different things. Peter Laviolette coached me, and he tried a lot of different things if we were in a funk. But this, to me, is just... There's other ways of doing it, and you don't have to embarrass the other team. They're garbage. They deserve to get their ass kicked, but that's just too much for me. I don't like it. I don't like it at all.
Principled individual. You're not for it. You're not alone. I mean, I'm sure a lot of athletes say the same thing. I wonder where, like, this idea that they disrespected the Suns and Steve Kerr shouldn't do that. Where did the players take responsibility? Where does Kevin Durant take responsibility? Andre Iguodala, who's a vet and been in the league for a long time.
Yeah, one of them should have said, hey, Steve, this is a little bit nuts here. No thanks.
And I would guess they didn't do that because they're like, this is pretty cool. And I wonder if he's going to do it again. I wonder if another coach is going to do it again. Because I guarantee you players are thinking, this is awesome. I'd love this opportunity. It wouldn't shock me if Kyle Lowry and DeMar were like, hey, Dwayne, can you give us that opportunity? Next time the Knicks are in town and we're up 30 at home, can we call our own shots coming out of a timeout?
Can you imagine playing hockey? I mentioned Detroit was a powerhouse. Like them killing a 7-0, and then Shanny stands up on the bench in his Detroit Red Wings gear with his skates on and coaching. Like I would shoot a puck at him. That's ridiculous. That's what you're talking about here. With a clipboard.
So what are you going to do? Throw a basketball?
Ultimately, that's the comeback losers like you have. What are you going to do?
But what are you going to do, though?
Nothing.
That's the thing. It's not a loser mentality. I'm on the winner's side here.
Loser's race.
It's not a loser's race. That's a loser's mentality. You're embarrassing me because I suck, so please don't embarrass me more.
Well, that's the other end of it. The other end of it is you suck that bad. You should be embarrassed that bad.
Right. It's not even about embarrassing. I think you're taking it too far to suggest that it's on Golden State to make sure and confirm that the emotions of Phoenix are in check. Steve Kerr is thinking about his own team. He's got blinders on. He doesn't care about Jay Triano. He doesn't care about the Suns. I'm sure there was a reason behind it. I'm sure it was planned. It was premeditated. He's probably had it in his back pocket for a while. He said even though they've been winning games, he has not liked the way their team has been playing recently. Feels like their eye is kind of off the ball. And he's throwing a trump card in. He's going to try something different. I like that it's the complete opposite of what Bill Belichick would do. Probably the complete opposite of what Greg Popovich would do. He's very different.
Well, is there any Triano quotes?
I haven't seen anything specifically out of Triano. My understanding is Kerr went to explain it to him afterwards or tried to reach out to him. But what's Jay Triano going to do? He's an interim head coach anyway. You know, and Triano, we all know him being a Canadian, and he's been involved with Basketball Canada. I don't blame Triano for his team. His team isn't good enough. Phoenix has been a doormat for a long time. All right, Bob McKenzie, our Hockey Insider in studio. What did he make of the Maple Leaf win last night against Tampa? His take on how we're supposed to get a read on what Lou Lamoriello is going to do between now and the trade deadline. What's going to happen in Chicago after that beatdown last night in Arizona? Update on Mike Smith. Calgary's been rolling recently, and they're in a fight for their life. Flames. He's going to miss the next two games.
I know, but good news. You could argue that if he's done, they're done, which they could be done anyway.
They're holding on for dear life.
Dear life.
They're in a real race out in the Pacific. So we'll get Bobby Mack in here. Alex Goff, Canadian Olympian, will join us from South Korea around 6:40. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. Pitchers and catchers starting to show up down at spring training, and Aaron Sanchez was there today and kind of admitted that there's no guarantees he'll be over the blister issues. He just hopes he can contain them, and he did a couple of years ago. Last year, we know the story, so we'll touch on that later in the hour. But the Insider's brought to you by Finance It, and Bob McKenzie has joined us in studio. What's happening, Bob?
Not much, boys. How about you?
Trying to get a read on how good the Maple Leafs are, like everyone else in the hockey world, and
Pretty good last night.
Big win last night, right? Big win against Nashville. Regardless of how everything plays out, they're fifth overall in the league. They've won 8 of 9.
They're on a roll. There's no question about it. And listen, we thought they'd be a good team this year. Are they as good as they've played for the last 11 games? Some people would say yes. But then people would say the same thing about the Bruins. And we talked last week about the ebb and flow of this season.
But when is there any way, Bobby, where a team could just say, you know what, we believe in the group, let's make a move here and go? Like, it's all this planning for the future and draft picks and draft and develop. I understand that, but when you have a young group like this, don't you have to just say, the hell with it, let's go for it, without being completely ridiculous?
Yeah, I guess what... What are these teams afraid of?
Nobody ever wins.
What's the definition of ridiculous? I mean, what would you have the Leafs do? Like, what would you give... Like,
I don't know, maybe jump in on McDonough. Would that be ridiculous?
No, but okay, but in order to jump in on McDonough... if I'm the Rangers and I've got a year left with McDonough under contract at a really affordable number, and he's 28 years old or whatever.
What are you saying? They're going to ask for Mitch Marner?
Well, they won't. Forget, you know, the Leafs. If you take Marner, Nylander, and Matthews off the table. But they're going to want, some real good young players. You know, I don't know. I'm not sure who that would be. I don't want to radio myself and say, oh, they'd want this guy or they'd want that guy. And some dim bulb's going to say Bob McKenzie said the Rangers want this guy from the Leafs. But it's not. You don't give away a late 20-year-old defenseman who's the captain of your team, who's on an affordable deal for a year, for a bunch of magic beans. They're not going to do it for... You know, some guy that's playing for the Marlies and or even Kasperi Kapanen or a first-round pick. They're looking for a player coming. They're looking for a couple of players coming back. They're going to want, for that type of player, I got to figure the price is going to be at least a first-round pick, a top prospect, an NHL, a significant NHL player. And if you're the Leafs, the thing of it is, when you make a move, and Tampa's going to go through the same thing, you don't want to give up somebody off the roster. Kind of defeats the purpose. If you're going to plug a hole on the blue line, and you're going to create one up front.
I just wonder if
The rentals have no value in that sort of deal.
No.
New York Rangers have no interest in Van Riemsdyk or Bozak or Komarov or any of those guys.
No, and the Leafs aren't going to trade any of their core pieces, and we know who that
exactly.
is.
Exactly. So like, if I were the Rangers, just as for instance, I would say, well, you know what? We need to center really badly, so we'll take Kadri. Well, the Leafs are like, we're not happening. We're not breaking. We're not going to create a second hole in our second line center. Okay, well, you know, then it's got to be, you know, and I say Connor Brown, and that's at the low end of what a team like the New York Rangers would want.
It's going to be more than that.
And when Van Riemsdyk's gone, assuming he's gone, and Bozak's gone, and Komarov's gone, and now if you take Connor Brown out of the equation, and you take Kapanen out of the equation, and the teams start asking for all these younger assets, then you say, go for it. But then next year, you've got a lineup that's filled with holes. So.
Well, I do think what separates McDonough from another, he's not a rental because he's got a year left
exactly.
on his deal, right?
Yeah,
so you're
going
to
sure.
have to pay more for that. But it's also more valuable to the team that's acquiring him because the so-called window that he's going to be a part of is more than just the next 3 months.
Yep.
But I think from a Leaf perspective, the biggest difference from my standpoint is if they were to trade a first-round pick, I wouldn't freak out.
No, not at all.
The past 3 years, they could not do that.
Yep.
That you could not trade first-rounders.
Absolutely. I think...
Now know, it's changed.
I don't think the Leafs feel like they want to get into the premium rental market. Maybe I'll be proven wrong on that. But the notion of giving up a first-round pick and a prospect for a guy that's only here for the balance of the season, whether it's Rick Nash or Evander Kane or Patrick Maroon or whoever, I just don't think they want to do that because I don't think they feel like they're one piece away, that this is going to push us over the top. Let's hold on to our assets. And if you have to spend them, then spend them on somebody who is going to be here next year. And a guy like McDonough would fit the bill to the extent that, you know, he fits perfectly in the salary profile for adding one more guy that's between $4 and $6 million. That can play in your top four. So, but as I say, these are the arguments that, you know, Tampa's wrestling with. And Tampa doesn't want to give up, but they may have to. They may have to give up somebody off the roster, but they don't want to.
Mm-hmm.
They got a whole whack of kids coming. You know, going through them the other day.
Half of them are at the World Junior.
Well, yeah, you know, you've got Howden, you've got Sorelli, you've got, and then you've got wingers like Radish and Kachuk, and they got, listen, there's a dozen guys that are close to playing for them. Both four, they got them in every position. They got 3-4 wingers. They got 2-3 centers. They got 3-4 defensemen.
You have to trade them at some
point. That are all 19 to 22 years old, still in junior, in Syracuse, looking like they might be players. So I don't know how many of those it would require for the New York Rangers to say, yeah, give us one of those and one of those and one of those and a first-round pick and maybe somebody off your roster.
Yeah. Well, I just think at some point, though, if you're Tampa, you just listed off a bunch of players. They can't all be on the team.
No.
Like, if you're going to keep Point and Stamkos and Kucherov and Gordy and...
Boston's going through the same thing. They've got a whole bunch of guys, not as many as Tampa and maybe not as high profile, but they've got a whole whack of guys that could be NHLers, and they can't have room for all of them. Mm-hmm.
And Toronto's not at that... Like, Levo's not in the same category as those guys. Or Soshnikov. Like, they're not in the same category as a Taylor Radish or...
Well, you know, you never know, but you're right.
Based on value, I wouldn't think.
Not right now, because there is the promise of more potential playing higher in the lineup for some of these guys in Tampa. But that's a risk that the acquiring team runs.
What about a guy like Nick Jalmerson? We've thrown his name out there. He's in a wasteland in Arizona. He's got this year and next at like 4.1.
Yeah.
Like, would he? How can he not be available?
He's available. So, they're not a blind. You know, they got him from Chicago because they thought they were going to be good. They're no good.
they suck so bad.
They're brutal. No,
maybe they're going to be better next year. And if they are going to be better next year, part of the reason they might be better is because they've got a veteran defenseman like Chalmerson. And what does it say to Oliver Ekman-Larsson if you send Chalmerson out the door? So there's a whole bunch of reasons why they don't want to trade him. Make it worth our while. And then it goes back to the same argument that I just gave you.
What are you going to trade
for?
Are
you going to start throwing around, you know, how many significant assets are you prepared to give up for a guy who's got as many miles on him as Chalmerson's got, keeping in mind the salary at least fits and he's under contract for another year?
Speaking of Chalmerson, what his team did to his old team last night seemed like it was kind of the end of the line for the Blackhawks season, didn't it?
Feels that way. And they're, you know, they're holding out hope, and Corey Crawford's trying to get healthy, and maybe if he gets on a run. So, but it certainly doesn't look good for the Hawks. You keep waiting for them to flip the switch, and the switch doesn't look like it's getting flipped, but stranger things have happened. It's a funny division they're into. Not a funny division, a hard division. There's not much forgiveness in that one when you've got Nashville, St. Louis, Winnipeg, Dallas.
Minnesota's getting hot. Dubnyk's doing what he always does.
Minnesota's right on the cusp, and you know those other four teams are like, they're real good teams. They're all contenders to varying degrees.
Well, what happens in Chicago if they miss? Let's say they fade. You know, they've lost six in a row. They're 10 points out. Let's say they end up, you know, with 80 points and it's ugly. People are turning on them in Chicago.
They've got a lot of lower level rentals that they're any of the guys you can look at, Tommy Wingles, Lance Boma. Not a lot to get excited about on the rental market given what's already out there.
Mm-hmm.
And they feel like they've got somebody, defenseman Jan Ruda, I think Michael Kempney. They feel like they've got guys in Rockford that could replace any of those guys easily. So I don't think that would make a seismic shift, but what it might do is tell Stan Bowman, I'm in the mode for hockey trades, and so I'll look at anything. So, you know, he made a hockey trade a year ago that was huge, you know, Saad for Panarin. Now, Saad's 25 years old, and he's had a bad year. He hasn't played nearly as well as he should. And that deal should have worked out better for the Hawks, and they liked it because Saad buys them so many more years. They would have been in Panarin coming up UFA. They would have had him for 2 years. I think they had Saad for four. So that's the rationale for doing that. And if you're going to get rid of Saad now, are you selling low? Because the reason you got him was because he's affordable for a lot of years and he's a good player and he hasn't maximized what he's done for you. But, you know, Stan Bowman's a pretty bold guy and he'd probably be wide open to doing quote-unquote hockey trades, but nothing on the rental market that would blow anybody away, and their core guys aren't going anywhere for a variety of reasons.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. Like, the main characters, Quinville's a different conversation. He's a coach. Yep. But Taves and Kane are locked up at 10.5 for a number of years.
Seabrook and Keith
are locked up.
Seabrook's had a terrible year. Keith has not had a great year. by his standards, by anyone's standards. So right now you're kind of stuck with that core and hope that everybody assumes that, you know, these guys that haven't played well, like Seabrook and Keith, well, they must be done. A lot of people, that's it. It's over.
People are saying.
You know what? And maybe it is. Maybe it is. But I'll tell you what. A lot of people said the same thing about Steve Yzerman in the latter years of his career. There was a point in time in Detroit, and I know, and some of this was injury related because Stevie had those really bad knees. But never forget, in Detroit, there was that feeling as Stevie got older and his knee was getting more miles on him, and the word out of Detroit was, we're not going to be able to win. We can't win with this guy because his knees are bad, because he's getting older, his game's diminishing, and that I'm never as quick to write off players like those as other people are. And yet, the way Seabrook's played this year would suggest that it's going to be tough sledding to get back. And the contract, the other thing people look at is they look at how many years are left. Oof. And how many dollars, and then they just roll it out and say, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I think people just can't get by that.
They can't get by that.
Might rebound next year, but what about the four or five after that?
Yeah, exactly. But the point is, worry about the third, the fourth, and the fifth years, whatever. It's getting the rebound. Can they get a bounce back from these guys? And they're left with no choice but to try and find out.
Yeah, I'd be willing to give Jonathan Toews the benefit of the doubt, Duncan Keith, for sure. I think a couple of them most certainly will, but there's probably a good chance at least one of them's faded and they're not going to find their game again. But we were talking yesterday about Ottawa and their situation, and Erik Karlsson's a fascinating case because he's been awful at times.
A lot.
Like, a lot. Like, in the last couple of times the Leafs have played him, I was in the building on Saturday night. I couldn't believe how careless he looked. His body language was awful. I mean, he's built up such a resume and such a reputation. He's getting paid more than likely regardless. But are there any whispers that people are afraid that the last surgery has really changed him?
Yeah, I guess if you were going to invest in him long term, you'd want to know that for sure, I guess. I think there's been games this year where he's been great and he looked like himself, but there's been far, far too many games. And is that because he had foot surgery in the offseason, or is that just because he missed the beginning of the year and you lose training camp and you lose the first month? And when you come back, the wheels fall off pretty quick for the team, and the attitude and the mindset and the psyche is just so battered and beat up that, you know. So I'd be inclined to think that most people would think, given a change of scenery or just a fresh start, even with the Senators, in a year in which the wheels aren't off and he has a training camp and everything, that he should be fine. But teams, if you were going to give up significant assets to get him in a trade or to sign him long term, you'd want to know that for a fact. That's for sure.
You'd have to. All right, Bob.
Thanks, boys.
Thanks for doing this. We'll get you in here later in the week, and trade deadline less than 2 weeks away.
Yeah. Week Monday.
Yeah, week Monday.
Get her done. Because you know what comes next, Dale. Mail it in March.
I was going to ask you.
Oh, man, you got me on mail it in March, and I love it.
Just going to Steve Kerr your way through March. Can't wait.
Let's ask Bobby quickly. It was basketball, but Steve Kerr.
He's letting the players drive the diagram?
Yeah, coach last night.
I said that's a joke, and numbnuts over here is like, I thought it was interesting.
Yeah, unique, different, inspiring.
Inspiring.
Very
he tried
inspiring.
To embarrass the. It would, I told him it would be like me when I was playing. Detroit was a powerhouse. Shanny behind the bench with a clipboard and his gear on. I would just shoot a puck at him and say,
I don't know enough about Steve Kerr other than, I mean, he's a
but
really,
the act itself.
Well, no.
But if a
head coach sometimes empowering players to do things, I think that's a novel concept. I don't know if there's an underlying, I'm trying to make the other team look bad. Or the circumstance, was it a blowout game? Or
it was a blowout game.
They
were
things. So maybe that's not the best time to do it. Maybe it would resonate better as an empowering move if they were up a point or down a point.
Mm-hmm.
And you have that much faith in some of your really smart players that you say to them, hey, what do you guys think here? You know.
Or they're getting killed themselves.
He coaches Golden State, right?
Yeah. Golden State.
I got to double check these things.
You got
that.
They're
getting blown out, and he can say, "You think you're so smart? Why don't you guys?"
Well, that too, but I don't know that he was trying to prove a point
to
anybody.
He wasn't trying to punish them.
I don't think. Yeah. So I mean, it would be fascinating to me if they were up a point or down a point, and he gave the whiteboard to Steph Curry and said, "Draw it up, Steph. Let's go. what do you got?
Yeah, then the optics are certainly different. But yeah, he was not doing it to be disrespectful. He wasn't thinking of Phoenix. He was thinking of his own team.
Yeah, and I think that's cool. And, and people know Steve Kerr better than I would. But if what you're telling me is true, I think it's just a new age guy who's empowering his players, and that would be well received by them, and would form a stronger bond with his players, and that's part of coaching.
That's exactly what he said.
And that's what guys like Kerr and Popovich seem to do in spades in in the NBA.
Very progressive. I want to see it in the NHL. Babcock, throw the whiteboard at Matthews.
The assistant coach sometimes gets to draw it up. That's the head coach goes away. And
let's do it, man. All right, Bob, thanks, buddy.
Awesome, boys.
There's Bob McKenzie, your Hockey Insider, brought to you by Finance It. Add a payment plan to your tool belt and break down large price tags into easy, affordable payments with Finance It. We're heading over to South Korea, the Tinder capital of the world.
Poof.
The Tinder numbers are off the charts. Alex Goff won a bronze in the luge, my favorite sport. She will join us next. All right, so we've woken one person up in South Korea this week. We called Steve Simmons a couple of days ago, and I think he was okay with it. It was early in the afternoon for us, so earlier in the morning for them over in Pyeongchang. It's 8:42 a.m. over there.
Depends what you did the night before. Not too bad.
If you won a bronze medal in the luge, what do you think you would have been doing the night before?
Dude, I would be so gooned.
I think I'd still be up. I hope that's the case, because we have an Olympic medalist on the line. She's been to multiple Olympics. She's over in Pyeongchang. She just won the bronze in luge. Here is Alex Goff. Alex, have you slept at all since winning bronze?
I've gotten a couple hours. Definitely need to get a couple and not go too hard. And I have another event in tomorrow, so took a little bit of time to enjoy it and celebrate with the people that came over, but still gotta be able to compete tomorrow.
How do you deal with the pressure? I've always wanted to ask an Olympic athlete. You put so much time, so many years into one event, and if it doesn't work out, you have to kind of worry about the consequences of going home with possibly nothing. You don't have to deal with that, but is there that kind of pressure inside your head? You put so much into it, you just got a medal to get something out of it?
I mean, I guess that pressure, it exists and it's there, but I knew going into this that what I wanted to achieve, and to achieve that, I knew that I had to be really consistent with my runs, and you know, if I could put myself in the game after run or after day one, then it was just a matter of, you know, going forward on day two and putting together, you know, the best that I could do. And if I can do that, I'm always kind of in the mix of being on the podium. So, you know, that's what I did, and it worked out for me.
With Alex Goff, who just won bronze in the women's single luge over in Pyeongchang, you've been to multiple Olympics. How would you compare this host city to the other host cities you've been to in the past?
You know, I think every game has a really different atmosphere, but they've all been amazing. And there's been an amazing crowd out at the track, and people cheering us on, and whether it's people who've come over as fans and family, or it's local Koreans coming and checking out the track, they've just been amazing, and everyone that's that I've dealt with in terms of volunteers and all the people involved have been amazing, and they've done such a great job of organizing stuff and putting together a great event.
Luge is like the most fascinating sport for me. I'm terrified watching. Like, how did you get involved in luge? What was it like to go down your first time?
So I was 13, and my mom was looking for a new activity for me to keep me busy in the winter, and family friends of ours were had their kids in the luge program, so she was like, hey, you should go try this sport out at COP, and so she signed me up for a camp to go try it, and you know, I grew up on skis, and was already pretty adventurous and just you know, up for anything kind of, so I went and tried it, and it was lots of fun, and kind of gotten to the program for that, and it's become the crazy whirlwind of a career that I've had.
Take us through the experience of crashing on the course. What's that like?
Oh, well, it kind of depends. Sometimes it's just, you know, you're going along thinking everything's okay, and you miss the entrance of a corner by a little bit, and you get just kind of bucked off your sled, and it's kind of no big deal. You're just sitting beside your sled instead of on it, but sometimes it can be a little bit rougher than that, and, you know, you do your best to get out of it with the minimal amount of you know, damage, and most of the time it's not too bad.
So it looks a lot worse than it actually feels. Is that what you're saying?
It looks a lot worse than it usually is. I mean, there's obviously the odd case where it's as bad as it looks, but often it looks more spectacular than it ends up feeling.
Okay. Well, congratulations on the bronze. Good luck tomorrow, and we appreciate you taking time for us. Have fun over there, and thank you for doing this.
Oh, thank you for having me, and thank you again.
There's Alex Goff, bronze medalist in the luge. Another competition coming up tomorrow.
Man, it seems like a party among the athletes in the village, huh?
I was going over the Tinder numbers. This is what I do to prep for the show. And Tinder use in Pyeongchang is up 1,850%.
Can you stop saying Pyeongchang? It's Pyeongchang. Pyeongchang.
So you're Pyeongchang. Korean now. You're Korean, and you know the way everything's supposed to be pronounced.
You keep saying Pyeongchang. It's Pyeongchang. Can you say that? Pyeong.
No. I'm not going to say it that way. I'll say it whichever way I choose to say it.
Okay, start again. The Tinder use in Pyeongchang?
1,850% increase in users changing their location to Pyeongchang, South Korea.
There you go.
1,850% increase.
That's a lot of sex.
Matches up 600%. Which means if you break down the numbers, there's a lot of people that are still swiping left over there. A lot of people that, or maybe swiped right, were hoping for a connection, and it was a strong no-guy swipe left. But Tinder use is on fire. We've talked about the other numbers that come out of this and the athlete's village, and apparently it's the greatest party in the world. And Alex Goff, you know, she said she got some sleep, but she's got to prepare for another event. But I would think after that event tomorrow, home clear, ready to go, ready to party.
The best routine was like if your event was on the first day, you win gold and you could just go nuts for 2 weeks. Wouldn't that be the ideal scenario?
It would be for me, I would think. Like, could you ever get tired of it? She's been to 4 Olympic Games. Like, would it get to a point where it's like a nuisance and you... Because a lot of times, like when the hockey players go, they don't even... I don't think they stay in the athletes' village. I don't think they did in Vancouver anyway. I know in the 2016 Summer Games down in Brazil, Team USA stayed in a yacht. They rented a yacht in, you know, whatever body of water is down there. And they didn't stay in the athletes' village. They didn't stay in hotels. They had a party yacht. What kind of routine do you think was taking place on that party yacht?
My God.
Lowry, DeMar, Boogie Cousins, Carmelo Anthony.
I just can't even imagine.
That kind of money, that kind of status, party yacht, go time.
Go time.
Go time. Anyway, thanks again to Alex Goff, who's over there in Pyeongchang, South Korea. Why do you take it so personally how I pronounce it?
Because it's so stupid. You're a professional broadcaster. You don't say Pyeongchang. It's Pyeongchang.
Did you see the... there was some TV channel, some newscast down in the States that accidentally put P.F. Chang's up instead of Pyeongchang. Man. I'm just pointing it out. It's a fact. That's what they did.
I know. And the jackasses behind the scenes that put up P.F. Chang's, they probably... The ones that are on screen look like the donkeys.
How many so you're worried about them?
Seen that?
Yeah, like the Ron Burgundy situation?
What?
Like a Ron Burgundy situation?
Yeah. What, when you start reading the wrong things? Because the teleprompter's all jacked up? What was old Ronnie saying again?
Well, he was swearing at one point.
Oh, like, scotchy, scotch, scotch.
But that was before the show. That was how he would warm up for the show. He told San Diego to go somewhere.
And I'm Ron Burgundy. Go f*** yourself, San Diego.
And that cost him his career until it was revived about 6 months later. Anchorman 2, one of the very limited...
No, it was awful.
Oh, I thought it was great. I thought Anchorman 2 was great. Maybe not as good as the first one, but rarely do you get a sequel that is at least in the same ballpark. I thought Wayne's World 2 was great. I thought Anchorman 2 was pretty good. I didn't like Dumb and Dumber 2. There was too much time in between, similar cast. They were too old. I don't know. All right. Raptors Heat tonight. Last time these two teams played, we had pretty significant dust-ups for the NBA.
Did we not go to break and then come back, or we're just going
No, we're
right
wrapping
through?
Things up here.
Let's wrap it up right now. We're back tomorrow at 4.
I got to get to my best bets brought to you by ProLine. And
all right, do it. Hurry up.
Well, I'm reading this breaking news that's coming in. I guess Seattle, their ownership, the expansion application has been confirmed. They've paid the $10 million and... Looks like, are you eating on the air? Like, look at this guy. This guy gets rattled at me for mispronouncing Pyeongchang, and then you start mucking food. I don't care anymore. What do I care about your opinion?
You were going to do your best bet, so I had a piece of cantaloupe.
What are you eating?
Fruit.
You brought eggs in today. Were those eggs I saw? That was disgusting. Where did you get 3 eggs? I can't believe I didn't bring this up until right now. Where did you find eggs?
I said, give me 3 hard-boiled eggs.
Don't do that again.
Why?
Don't ever do that. All right, time now for our best bets brought to you by ProLine. I think Columbus, they've been sliding recently. They get going tonight. Tampa's not losing 2 nights in a row. They'll go into Buffalo and win. Boston at home over Calgary. Throw down 20. You can score 80. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio and get way into the game with ProLine. It's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. Noodles is back tomorrow. Thank God.
You didn't like doing it with just me?
No, we had a good time until this final segment.
Pyeongchang. It's not Pyeong.
I don't think I was saying it improperly or like disrespectfully. I think
it
was a Canadian accent.
Improperly.
All right. Are you going to be here tomorrow or are you going to Steve Kerr Wednesday afternoon? Oh, we got Jerry's tomorrow.
All I know is February 23rd is my birthday, and that is a personal day.
All right. We're out of here. Enjoy your evenings. We're back tomorrow at 4 p.m. We'll chat then.